Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. We're returning to eulogies because of the strength of some of the correspondence we've got over the last few days, and in particular two letters which have been supplied to us by two bishops, two princes of the church, to different families who were refused eulogies at their beloved one. Indeed, one family were refused eulogies when there was two coffins at the head of the church, a mother and a father. And I'll begin with Charlie Redmond. Charlie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Just tell us your situation, Charlie. I know you're still very upset.
Well, I listened to the debate you're having on Tuesday, and mm-hmm. it reminds me of the time when my late wife, Grania, passed in 2016. And about a month before she passed, I wrote to the then Bishop of Meath and asked him, could he grant me any way that I could say some words to celebrate Grania's life and to thank the people who I wanted to thank, who had helped Grania on her very arduous journey through cancer.
Because you had been aware that the Diocese of Meath and the Bishop at the time, Michael Smith, and has not changed since. He's no longer a bishop, he's retired. He banned eulogies from inside the church.
He did, you know, and as I said, you probably have the letter that I wrote that I received back from him, which I have to admit, I received back very quickly from him, but there was a couple of lines in it, or one line in particular, that really, it upset me the time, and I kept the letter, and even to this day, I don't know what the point was he was trying to make. I wouldn't imagine in any way he was trying to be cruel or anyway. I just thought the line was slightly insensitive, and I'm sure he didn't mean to be insensitive, but at the juncture that I was at that stage with my wife in the hospital, I just thought it was he may have not have known that it was just I thought it was wrong, but I think that's getting away from
just to be clear, and in fairness to him, because you have alluded to it, this is what he said, and it is on obviously the church letter heading. And it's from Bishop Michael Smith, Bishop Meath. He says, the prevalence of cancer in these times means that many face the same pain and suffering, even if that is of little consolation to you and her extended family. This is Grania. In relation to your request, the simple answer is that I am unable to approve it. Every death brings its own distress and pain, and giving permission in some cases and not allowing in others would place all in a very invidious situation.
Yeah. Well, it was the first line that you called out there, which was an upsetting one for me, with the prevalence of cancer and the concept, would it give me any consolation? How would I get any consolation for anyone else going through what I was going through at the time? I just thought that was
the prevalence of basically. Well, we can't let people who are listening make their own judgment. The prevalence of cancer in these times means that many face the same pain and suffering, even if that's of little consolation to you and her extended family. It's Grania he's referring to, obviously. I don't know. What way do you interpret that?
I'm still at a loss, Joe, to understand exactly what he meant by it. But, you know, I think then we're getting away from the issue that the debate at all you raised on Tuesday was that, I fully understand and accept that in some circumstances the eulogy has been hijacked by some people for their own agenda and their own gain. And I think you know what I'm referring to there.
Yeah.
But we can't judge everybody by the actions of a few. And it wasn't that long ago that the church asked us to not judge them by the actions of a few. So can we not get the same? Like, we have the same pontiff, we have the same primate, but we don't have the same rules when it comes to our burials. And I know somebody mentioned the other day about the sanctity of the Mass. I fail to see how having a picture on a coffin or somebody saying a few words for a few minutes in any way compromises the sanctity of the Mass. And if it does compromise the sanctity of the Mass, does it only compromise it in the Diocese of Mead? It doesn't compromise it anywhere else.
Yeah. And it's... But by the way, we obviously put this in because we got your letter, not just today, where we had to put in questions, which we're obliged to do, to the Mead Diocese. A diocesan spokesperson told Liveline that no one is available to speak to you or indeed on the programme. Please see the following responses. The diocese was not aware of and holds no information on this correspondence. This is a lot of people have cancer letter. This correspondence are its related circumstances until contacted by the programme. The diocese apologises for the hurt caused, which was never the intention. They say this is the first they knew of it. So the diocese, I don't know what they mean by the diocese apologises for the hurt caused. Was there a big meeting we were all unaware of, which was never the intention, and encourages the parishioner, that's you, Charlie, to contact Bishop Tom Deanahan's office in Mullingar, if you so wish. Bishop Michael Smith retired as Bishop of Mead almost 7 years ago and is not available for comment. Thankfully, that means Michael is still alive. He was not available for comment. That's understandable, I suppose. That's his gift. As per the reply yesterday from the Catholic Communications Office to your colleague, in the interest of protecting the integrity of Mass, and so as to treat all parishioners equally, exceptions to the funeral guidelines should not be made.
But you see, I don't think Bishop Smith intended to cause any offence or any hurt in any way when he sent the letter. I was more confused by it by anything else, and slightly upset, I must admit. But it's the eulogies that I like. The parishioners of Mead are all treated the same, that they're not allowed. But they're not treated the same as parishioners from other dioceses. Mm. And as I said, if the sanctity of Mass is compromised in Mead, why is it not compromised in other parts of the country?
And as we heard yesterday, Charlie, there have been examples of peeping parishioners in Mead having their funeral, the obsequies, in a different diocese, maybe the diocese the deceased was born in. So they could have a eulogy.
Yeah, well, and that's true. And Joe, where I am here in Ashbourne, I could have gone down the road to Rollstown or into Garristown and had the funeral there. Or I could have gone to where my granny was from, Cavan or Leitrim, and had it up there. But Ashbourne is where my kids were christened, where our kids were christened, and where our kids made a communion and a confirmation, and that is our parish church. So why would we take people out of Ashbourne?
Yeah.
But I know the rules are the rules, but it just seems to me we don't treat the people of Mead in the same way as our bishop isn't treating us the same way as other bishops treat their prisoners. Yeah. And I just would hope that the bishop may start a conversation with his parish priest and the parish priest start a conversation with the parishioners and see what it's like on the ground. Do people want it or people don't want it? Like, if people don't want it, you know, they don't have to have it. But please give people the choice of saying a few words about, like, I don't think, as I said, sorry for repeating myself, that the sanctity of the Mass is in any way compromised by somebody standing up and saying a few nice words about the person. And like, I mean, I heard the other day someone spoke up a eulogy for an hour. Well, that to me is just disrespectful to everyone.
Alluding to your valid point that some people have abused it. Some people have abused it to such an extent that it made national headlines.
I accept that.
It is an exception. I take your point.
Yeah.
But in fairness to the Bishop Smith, his final lines, the integrity and intent of the funeral rite has to be respected. You may have noticed that in recent days, this is November 2016, Dublin, I presume he means the Archdiocese of Dublin, has also brought out directives on the celebration of funerals, very necessary for many reasons. Many, including the parish and myself, are happy to support and accompanying your wife and all of you in prayer at this difficult time. Now, Dublin is definitely not as strict under any circumstances as Meath. We would have heard about it, I'd say, in big numbers. Anyway, that's where you stand at the moment, Charlie, is it?
Well, it is. I mean,
If you got a couple of minutes, I know you have to go. But Dee is on the line. Dee, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. And what's your situation? Because you have a letter as well from a bishop.
I do. I have a weak letter, I would say, from the bishop. Now, forgive me if I sound nervous. That's not my intent.
You're fine.
But I'm here just to share my story and the impact it's had on me and my five siblings. So basically, in December 2023, within 48 hours, the 23rd and the 25th of December, both our parents died. Yeah. Now, we were expecting Dad to die, and that was fine. We all get to say our goodbyes and, you know, everything we needed to do. Mum died unexpectedly, so we were in major shock. And we were propelled from organising one funeral into a double funeral around Christmas time. Had to delay that because Mum had passed away by an extra day, and it made us that I had to write a eulogy for Mum.
Okay.
And we wrote both eulogies from a really deep place of love and compassion. And what happened then was, with the arrangements that needed to be made, the eulogies were given to the priest of our local parish, which is the Diocese of Lafoe, and we were basically shot down straight away that we weren't allowed to read them. And this angered me profusely. That's all I can say, Joe. It's phenomenal how that decision has impacted my life for 12 months.
This is the Rafoe Diocese in Donegal.
Rafoe Diocese. You know, we weren't even afforded the choice whether we were able to do it or not. And we were strong enough to do that because we had dug deep. We had read it out. And, you know, I had practiced my mother's eulogy. It was 1 minute and 15 seconds long.
Wow.
And Dad's was 1 minute and 30 seconds long. And we weren't allowed to read it out. So it wasn't open for discussion. And basically it angered me from a stance, basically, that I could say is predominantly I see a double standard here. The fifth commandment states, honour thy father and mother. And we did that in their life. And we were not allowed to honour them in their death. And I would have loved nothing better than to honour my mother at the altar and speak about her and celebrate her life and how grateful we were of the hundreds of people that came out on the 27th of December.
Yeah, and to squeeze it into under 2 minutes.
Yes, exactly. 2.5 minutes. Under 3 minutes is all we wanted. You know, so I knew my mother wanted a eulogy, and it only came about 20 days previous because Mum's sister passed away in Raheny. And my cousin stood up and said a eulogy for his mum. Now, my mum couldn't attend her sister sooner because she had had a stroke. She was feeling her bound. So we watched it online. And Mum was lying back in her chair and we were watching the Mass. And my cousin had said the eulogy and she said, oh, they were lovely words. He really captured my aunt. And it sort of brought a connection to the two of them. She was connected in those moments to her sister. And I could see that the little trickle of a tear coming down the side of her face. She hadn't seen her sister for years. So to me, that was powerful. That those couple of minutes that my cousin had really brought her back to her youth, growing up with her sister, her memories. Okay, so she turned around and she looked at me, and my other sister was in the room, and she said to me, I hope you say something nice about me. And I said, well, if you behave yourself, I might. Laughingly, you know, at her. Little did I think 20 days later, my own mother would be dead. You know, it was a massive shock.
And as you said, first of all, it's very unusual to sit through the Mass, the obsequies of both your parents at the same service. So that's really...
It was a surreal scene. You know, two coffins at the top of a chapel. And I was sitting there, and I'll be honest with you, Joe, this has impacted me in my process of grief and grieving. I'm stuck in the acronym of grief, which is DABDA. I'm stuck in anger. Because I sat there for the whole funeral, seething with anger that I could not speak for my mother and my father. My brother was going to speak for my father. I was speaking for my mother, and I was not allowed to do that. So the rest of the process of the funeral and the hundreds of people that sympathised with me just went by in a flow. I'm stuck in Groundhog Day. You know, and I can't get past that.
And the letter you got from the... And I know we're not allowed to say this, but those two bishops... who are still alive, thank God. Those two men should be ashamed of themselves.
they
for
should.
Writing these letters. Yeah. They read these are you know, these are well educated, obviously by dint of their elevation as a prince of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Your letter came from Adam McGuckian, SJ, means he was a Jesuit, Bishop of Raphoe. He's moved on, I think, since. And what was it in particular about his letter? Go on.
Sorry, Joe, for cutting across you there. It's just two of the lines in particular. It's like the funeral itself carries a sense of hurt. I mean, it's more than a sense of hurt. Yeah. I can't even describe the word, what it has done to me personally. These are my feelings, you know, and nobody can take them away from me, but they caused them, you know. Yeah. And then the funeral mass is entirely an expression of faith. And I get that. My dad was not religious. My mum was. And she was a devout Catholic. Okay. And she gave to the church. She gave to the diocese financially, emotionally, spiritually. And I wasn't expecting a priest that never met her to turn around and give a very unempathetic homily with a couple of words of my mum and my dad integrated into it. You know, the congregation couldn't even hear him. And months later, and this is what sticks for me too, months later, people have come to me, including family members, and said, we often wonder why none of you spoke at your parents' funeral. Mm-hmm. You know, they thought we weren't able to. And I was like, it's because we weren't allowed. And they were like, seriously? And I said, yeah, we weren't allowed to speak, you know. Now, the bishop has offered me his prayers for the consolation of what has happened. That's no good to
me. I say that at the end. I realise that your loss is very great.
Yeah.
And assure you of my prayers for the consolation that you surely need.
Yeah. And like, it's not that what I need. I need an apology. And I need this to change. You know, like, faith should not be shackled in policies. And that's the way I see it. If you're going to be a devout Catholic, you shouldn't be chained down by anything. Ireland has suffered enough at the hands of many things that have happened through religion.
But these are people, parishioners and Catholics and followers of the faith are asking to be buried in the church that they love and have been faithful to, obviously, in the main, I presume. And it's not as if the church is turning away, God forbid, and they should never turn away anybody. It's not as if the church is turning away people who've criticised the church or said they want nothing to do with the church or it's our Jesus Christ. Forget about the institution of the church. They're turning away people who have professed their belief and their faith in the church. And again, I didn't know this applied to Donegal as well, the Archdiocese of Diocese of Raphoe. He says the diocesan policy disallows eulogies during the course of the Mass. I know that from your perspective it seems like a heartless rule, but it's meant to apply to all situations.
Which simply isn't true.
Why do you say that? Have you been at...
Because at my aunt's funeral, 20 days previous to my mother's funeral, my cousin got to say a eulogy from the altar about his mother.
In the Diocese of Raphoe?
Not in the Diocese of Raphoe, in Raheny in Dublin.
Okay.
You know, this policy, from what I can gather, is countrywide.
It seems to be different everywhere. Not everywhere. There's a few dioceses who seem to really, really enforce it.
Yeah, but you know, I suppose that's what it's reading. For some people that they can say it and some people can't. It should be either across the country or not at all. But for me, my main story and impact of this is has put me in a stage where I can't get past it.
Okay, but when it is only 12 months hence from they died in December 23 and we're now in January 25. But Dee, what was it like? What was the service like for you? What is your memory of the service? Apart from seeing the two coffins beside you of your parents, what are your memories of the service?
I don't have anything other than anger. My blood was boiling and I was just stopping myself from going up to that altar and taking the mic off the priest and saying the eulogy to honour my parents. Hundreds of people passed me and shook my hand. And I can't tell you, half a dozen of them. I was so angry.
Okay.
And you're in a trance. You're going through the motion, you know? We had spent 10 days in the hospice, day and night, 24 hours a day with Dad. And we got to say our goodbyes. Mum died suddenly. We didn't get to say our goodbye. And it was really important to me that I could do that for her in her death. And that was stolen from me by the priests and their policy for not allowing a eulogy in the Diocese of Raphoe, which I think is extremely unfair. Like, it was a judgment that was made on my behalf of my courage and my strength to deliver a eulogy for my mother that should not have happened. And I would really hope it never happens to anyone else.
Statement from the Diocese of Raphoe, a spokesperson, not available at this time. But the protocol followed in the Diocese of Raphoe is long-standing and in accordance with national and universal church guidance. But then, obviously, a lot of dioceses and parishes in Ireland are ignoring national and universal church guidance and using their common sense in the world we live in. Father Michael Cusack is in Luxembourg and has been listening. I don't know whether, I know you've been listening over the last few days, but Father Michael, have you heard Charlie and Dee today, these two letters from the two bishops?
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe, and good afternoon to your listeners. And just from the outset, I want to say to Charlie and Dee how sorry I feel for their pain, because I can hear it so alive in Dee and understand it very fully. Because, you know, a funeral is such a poignant moment in anyone's life. And for her to have had to experience, you know, the hurt that she's carrying now, to have it pushed at her in a way is... it's hard to listen to. I know it's the truth, but it's just hard for me as a minister in the church to listen to that too, because I think our role is always to try and bring families into a place of healing and comfort and do what we can. Charlie used a very interesting phrase about conversation. And I think, you know, we're supposed to be listening to the people. We're supposed to be listening to their pain. We're supposed to be listening to their needs. I mean, there are rules and regulations for everything. But when it comes to the very sensitive time of death and the pain of loss and heartbreak, we have to be particularly sensitive.
And what do you think, did you manage to hear? These are letters which are committed to paper, which are typed. I presume the bishops, in this case, Adam McGuckie and Michael Smith, didn't type them themselves. So they obviously worked on the letters. These are considered letters, both of which the families find insulting, to say the least. The prevalence of cancer in these times means that many face the same pain and suffering, even if that is of little consolation to you and her, which is Granny, her extended family. The bishop writing that realizes there is hurt in that sentence, but he still proceeds with it.
Sure.
In relation to your request, the simple answer is that I am unable to approve of it. Mm-hmm. Every death brings its own distress and pain, and giving permission to, in some cases, and not allowing it in others would place all in a very invidious situation. Well, hard luck if we're in an invidious situation. Are these princes of the church, have they never been in an awkward situation? Have they never been wrong?
I can't answer for any of either of them or even think of what their reasoning is, Joe, only to say that in my pastoral practice, you know, we sit with the people. We try to hear what they need at a funeral time. Very often it means compromise, and compromise is possible. So the worst thing you can do is jump to say no to anything. Mm-hmm. I've had many experiences during my time where something seemed initially, it's not possible. And yet when you sit and listen for an explanation given to you by the family and a context, it can take on a different meaning. And I have in my time too.
And both families say, sorry for going across here, Michael.
No, but
both, sorry, Michael, both,
than anything else.
Both families are saying, and by the way, I really appreciate your contribution, and I know you're not a spokesperson for the church, but both families are saying to us clearly now, this response from the bishop's palace, or whatever they call them these days, have added to our hurt. In the second letter from Alan McGuckian, he says, the priest, i.e. through him, was attempting to apply the diocesan policy in that disallows eulogies Well, as Dee pointed out, she was at a service in Dublin, but I know it's different during the course of the Mass. I know that from your perspective, it seems like a heartless rule, but it's meant to apply to all situations. If you call it a heartless rule, why would a prince of the church not have any flexibility on it?
Yeah, but it's not even them. I think it's the listening to the people. Like, I mean, Charlie has said clearly that he doesn't want to second guess the bishop's sincerity in the letter. But
that applies to both.
Which is very generous of him in that. Yeah. But I think also, you know, the need to the point that Charlie also made about needing to hear the people and needing to listen to where people are at is our role, you know, principally as ministers in the church. So I honestly feel terrible listening to both of Charlie and Dee. And I know that what Dee is saying is absolutely true, that she's stuck in grief because of this terrible experience. And it should have been, I mean, while it's a painful experience in itself at any time to have a funeral and the loss of a loved one, it shouldn't be accelerated or increased by a hurt that's been visited on her. I mean, and you know, Joe, you know all the rules that are there around, you know, abuses that can happen in these scenarios. But by and large, when you sit with people and say, look at, can you, you know, make sure that the person who's delivering is able to deliver clearly, try and keep it to, you know, 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And try and, you mean, you shouldn't have to say to anyone to try and keep it respectful, but unfortunately there have been examples where things have gone out of hand. But rare exceptions.
Exactly. And in fairness, but is it, Michael, because both of these men, both of the situations that now prevail in Meath and it seems in Raffo, the current holders of the Archbishop's staff, or the Bishop's staff, the current holders of that have inherited the rule. And are they, in fairness to Alan and indeed to Bishop Deanahan, are they placed in a difficult position where you inherit a rule and it can be very difficult or even upsetting or indeed insulting to your predecessors to change it?
Well, no, I think a change is always possible. I mean, Pope Francis has continually been trying to exhort the people to bring about change, and his priests, you know, to try and be people who listen to the people. And I think if we listen to the people and their needs, there's a very clear need in the stories that have been on your programme this week and in the lives of many to be able to somehow say something, you know, heartfelt on the occasion of the loss of someone who's so dear to you. And like Dee pointed out, you know, to honour your mother and father, and that was her idea. She would be honouring them by saying, you know, you've been a fantastic mother, a wonderful dad. And to be denied that opportunity, I think, is difficult. I can only say sorry, and it's not for me to say it in that sense, you know.
Okay, and in fairness to, I haven't read the biography of Bishop Deanahan, but I know Adam McGuckie, and I followed him a little bit, primarily because he was a Jesuit. I don't know why. I think Jesuits have a generally very, very good reputation. But my memory serves me correctly. Adam McGuckie stood up on the housing issue and said that the right to housing should be enshrined in the Irish Constitution. So he's not afraid of controversy. Is Alan. But anyway, people, Charlie, Michael, you do allow eulogies, don't you, at your in your gift, so to speak?
Well, where I am here, actually, I'm fortunate enough that I hardly have any funerals, and that I'm working with the expat community in Luxembourg. But they are allowed, yes. And I have to say, Joe, I have been deeply moved by many, many eulogies I've heard over the years. I mean, they've been more impressive than perhaps the input I've tried to put in, because it comes from the heart, and it's genuine, and you know, one I had recently, all three of the children spoke, and it really helped them. And I think that's where Dee is at. You know, there's something cathartic in trying to be able to express on that day, and it's a lost opportunity, and it can never be retaken.
Really? You've only had one funeral, yes. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Charlie, I know you have to go, but people are, and Dee as well, sorry, but I know I'm speaking to Charlie because he has to go. People admire your your Christianity, Charlie, and saying, I don't think there was any malice in the bishop when he wrote those words.
I don't think so, Joe.
Okay.
I think he as I said, it confused me at the time, and it still today confuses me as to what he meant. And I don't think he meant to be, you used the word insulting, I wouldn't use that word. I think it was insensitive. It was insensitive at the time. As I said, I held on to the letter, and just because I take it out often and read through it. But just going back to, and thanks Father Michael for the apology, and indeed to the Bishop of Meath for the apology that has been issued through you, Joe. It's great to hear that people, you know, are willing to admit when they were wrong. My situation with Grainne was slightly different than Dee's, is that we had three celebrants on the altar. One was the parish priest in Meath. The second was from Dublin, and the third co-celebrant was a close friend of Grainne's family. Yeah. And he gave the homily. So just as for the purpose of clarity, the homily was actually like a eulogy to Grainne. And he gave it in his words, not in mine. And anyone who left the church that day came up to me and actually said, I think I know Grainne more personally now than I ever knew her.
Because a priest happened to be a friend, yeah.
Absolutely, and I would have liked to get up and say I think that's what I miss.
Okay, that point is well and gently made. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I was talking to Charlie there, just commiserating about Grainne and her passing. A number of people are quite taken by the fact, Dee, that when you spoke about both of your parents who were recently buried, Jackie and Anne, that the eulogy you offered to give and were refused was just over a minute. Under
a minute
2 minutes.
15 seconds, for Mum, and 1 minute and 30 seconds for Dad. It just was basically a small synopsis and picture of
Do you have them handy?
Well, I'm on my phone and they're in my phone, Joe.
Well, it's up to you. What's the harm?
Basically, you know, what I can say is, you know, my mother was well known. She worked in the local small shop in Killybegs in County Donegal for 27 years. So everybody knew her. She was chatty. She was integrated in her community. She sang in the choir in Killybegs, which wasn't her parish, but she sang in that choir for over 25 years.
Okay.
And she was involved in the active age group. So she was a well-known lady, hence hundreds and hundreds of people came out to sympathise, which we were very grateful for.
Okay.
And my mother had practical skills. Unbeknownst to us, what she could turn her hand to was unbelievable. Oh. And she passed all that down to us. And she was an extremely practical woman. And I'll say that from a sense of I suppose there's a type of romanticism in their passing. Dad dying on the 23rd, Mum dying on the 25th. She couldn't live without him and he couldn't live without her.
Okay.
And that basically was sort of like what it was for us, holding on to that part of it in one way. Because when I went up, they were both in hospital at the same time. And when I went up on the 23rd to tell her that Dad had passed away, she had said to me, what's going to happen to me? And I said, don't worry, Mum, I'll look after you.
Yeah, so, of course.
Like that. That was the plan we said we were going to do. She said she wanted to go to the funeral. The doctors weren't going to let her be discharged. So the priest in the hospital said he would say a little mass for her. And we'd bring her down to that with the family and Dad.
Okay.
But that didn't happen anyway in the end. She became too ill to move. She wasn't not that she wasn't conscious. She just was ill. She was sleeping all the time. That didn't happen anyway, and she had said to me what she wanted, the hymn she wanted sung at Dad's funeral.
Okay.
So I recorded her singing Angel's Wings on my phone, and she was singing that as best she could, and her speech wouldn't have been 100%. She'd had a few strokes, so she had a wee bit of a speech.
And you're not reading directly, but that was about Anne McGetting. What were you hoping to say and were disallowed from saying about your father, Jackie?
My father, Jackie, was well-known countrywide. He was an Shell oil tanker driver for the most of his life. So a lot of people knew him, the length and the breadth of the country. And he also delivered timber. He could turn his hand to anything. He built the house we lived in, our family home. He built many other homes, given wood, timber to people to roof their houses. He built beehives. He done all types of woodwork.
Okay.
Everybody has something belonging to him in their house. Should it be an egg cup or a base of a lamp? Everybody knew him. He was involved in fishing in the community for a long time. He done that. And it's very hard to say. He was there all his life.
Okay.
And everybody knew him. And he taught my brothers and myself everything that we need to know. I can plumb a dishwasher and a washing machine the oil in my car and change the tyre and do all the stuff because my dad taught me.
Well, two great people, even those little contributions.
Great people,
we got a picture of them. Gay, stay with us, Dee. Dee was talking about her parents, Jackie and Anne McGetty. Gay Brocklesby, Gay.
Yes.
You agree with eulogies. Your point, please, Gay.
Absolutely. Well, two things I want to say, and I'm in a rush because I've got to get somewhere.
Okay.
Basically, I want to say that, first of all, I'm in Toastmasters, and nobody makes any speech ever in Toastmasters unless it's timed. And we're given something like 5 to 7 minutes in the case of a Toastmaster, or something like that. It's timed. And if you go over that time at a competition, you're straight out. You're the best speaker ever. And I suggest that if the tradition became that undertakers oversaw that and said, that church only allows 4 minutes or 3 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, something like that is plenty. And say they allow that, you can't go with the time. Would you mind if you just time your speech before you go?
Yeah,
just
that's,
time
and practice it.
That's
and
what
sound,
we do.
The other thing, if you time it beforehand, you say it out loud. You get at least used to hearing it yourself. Yes.
And he could even offer to listen to it for the person if necessary.
Yes, yes.
And that would give a feeling and stop all these nasty types
the Pope has told the clergy that their homily after the gospel, if they are doing one, should be no longer than 8 minutes. That'd be a record.
Good speaking. But the other thing I want to say to you about this, I think that I find so much helpful thought in eulogies because you get people who are quirky things or a bit grumpy or a bit unusual, and the family accept this, they acknowledge this, they say nice things about it, and they put it in the context of the entire life. People whose lives are perfect and good and they get on with everybody are fine. But those who don't are a bit difficult or anything else, I think eulogies are a wonderful example of how we should treat people well before they're dead. I think it's something we can learn from hugely. So I definitely think they're important.
Okay.
But I do think the undertaker would be a very suitable person to say, because if undertakers, for example, during COVID, I think there was something about flowers. And if that church doesn't allow flowers, it doesn't allow flowers. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
So if it is a church, said the undertakers, we here suggest a maximum 4 minutes or something reasonable like that. The undertaker could do as part of his duties and say, would you like to practice or say?
Well, what do you think, given today, what do you think of an outright ban?
Bishop of Meath, I happen to know, I don't know him personally, but I have to know he's extremely, extremely conservative because I lived in Rome for 5 years and no names or anything like that. But I remember a young man became a priest in Rome and he's very conservative. And where
does he work? That's
in the parish of Meath.
That's fine.
But he's extremely
But I don't know whether you're talking to the previous incumbent, Michael Smith, or the current incumbent. Okay,
that's
allowed.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Well, when you call a conservative is not an insult by any stretch of the imagination. Indeed, it can be the opposite.
No, except
the eyes. Okay, but
it should be nameless.
Okay.
Only he didn't even have a parish council. He didn't want one, which is not allowed. Not that one.
Okay,
so
Gay.
Anyway,
that's Gay. Gay Brocklesby and Toastmasters are still going strong. Obviously, Michael wanted to come in there. Go ahead, Michael. Michael
Cusack. Dee spoke so beautifully of her parents there now, and to talk of, you know, the difficulty that she went through between trying to relate with her mother, who's a stroke victim, and relate the death of her father. I had the very same experience with my own dad. In fact, I had to be with my mother as she said goodbye to my father down the phone because my mother's also a stroke victim. So I know the pain very much, but I think for Dee, hopefully, even this program has helped her that, you know, you're facilitating now her chance to try to say, not just to a church, but to the country, what she thought of her mother. But I know it's the moment that's lost that she's grieving even more, you know.
Okay.
But thanks to Dee for telling us about her mum. I know the type of person she's talking about and her dad, who obviously thought her more than I'll ever know. because I couldn't change the oil in my car if you paid me.
Okay. Well said. Thanks. Stay with us. Joe at rt.ie 51551. Text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. And 51551 is our text number. Marion, your point, please, Marion.
Hello, yes. As both a grief coach and also with a lot of personal experience of loss, I can't stress how important community support is in the grieving process, including the support of religious communities. People are at their most vulnerable, and part of the grieving, you know, is rituals and honouring their loved ones, as Dee pointed out. She was blocked from honouring. Part of it is your grief being witnessed. You know, there are some really very sensitive priests, and we've had the experience of that. My sister Julie pointed out that when our other sister died in July, the priest who hadn't been in the parish came. He allowed us to have a lovely family eulogy, but he also had gone to the trouble of looking up on RIP the comments in the condolences and incorporating them into his speech. Another example I have, some years ago, a friend of my son's died, a young man, quite suddenly, and I went with him to the Mass, although I'm not a Mass attender, and it was the most beautiful coming together. The church was full of young adults. The priest knew that this young man, John, loved Madonna, and he brought in references to Madonna. If my memory is right, I think he actually played some of her music. Just thought at that time, if the church wants to attract young people, this is showing them the caring that should be in Christianity and religions. This structural banning, eulogies are so important. Yes. Now, there have to be guidelines, but you can get an insight into the person. There's a witness to the person that people have lost. It's an opportunity, really, of honour. Honouring is a huge part of grief, honouring one's loved one. So I just, my heart goes out to Dee and Charlie and the other people, you know, who have lost. And it does affect, everyone's grieving process is unique and there's no time frame, but it will affect the comfort you get from people and rituals, how somebody can get through, particularly that initial shock and vulnerability. And then there's Dionne moving into the ongoing of living with grief and loss. It's just so sad that what should be a community of support is actually causing more heartache in the grieving.
And you've enunciated there, Marion, how important, about even the Madonna reference, how important that can be to the family. And everything helps at a funeral. Everything that's personally said and personally referred to is helps as well. Definitely helps. Okay, Marion,
Marion. No, just with her mentioning the Madonna songs, I'd love to know what they were, but I remember a couple of years back, you know, a family wanting to have a Michael Jackson song.
Okay.
And my immediate response was sort of, oh my God, what song is it, you know?
Okay.
But when I sat down with them and they explained the context and where this piece of music had, and it was a beautiful piece of music, actually quite biblical in a way, but where it had played a part in the life of the deceased, a young mother, it made absolute perfect sense. And it was the most moving tribute to be played as her husband and children were leaving with the remains. They played a piece of music that was always with them when they were with their mother, and a piece that brought her joy and comfort. Even though it was a Michael Jackson song, it had, the lyrics were utterly appropriate and it was extremely moving. So I think we have,
you know, we need to search for ways of compromise and of understanding of people's story. People aren't here to wreck anyone's experience or any liturgy, mm-hmm. but actually to try and enhance it in some way.
Okay. Thanks indeed, and I hope, as Father Michael said today, is of some help to you grieving for your parents who are died within 2 days of each other, Dee.
Yeah. I do. I'm grateful for his comment, to be honest, and I'm also very grateful to you, Joan, particularly because you were a big part of my mother's life in relation to, you know, you go up and visit her at lunchtime and you stick your head in the door and say, you know, Mum, are you asleep? And she said, no, I'm just resting my eyes and listening to Joe.
Okay.
So, you know, listening to you for that hour in the day took her to a place in the outside world. It made her feel part of the outside world. She couldn't get out.
Oh, God.
And I do feel the irony in this, that this, I think, being able to speak in this open stage, even as nervous as I am, is going to help me to take the next step. So thank you.
Okay, well said, Dee, and thanks indeed. God rest Jackie and Anne. I should also, people are pointing at, was the Charlie Redmond who spoke to us at the beginning of the programme about his wife Grania and his late wife Grania, and as he said, he wrote to the bishop in advance because they knew the end was near, and the Bishop of Meath refused a eulogy. That was the phrase. The prevalence of cancer in these times means that many face the same pain and suffering. That is the legendary Charlie Redmond, who was I think he's legendary because he was a Dublin firefighter. Most people think he's legendary as well because he won All-Ireland Men's Senior Championship when he played for Dublin and was the bane of Meath, by the way. Now he's living in Meath. But anyway, that was the great footballer, Charlie Redmond, who was talking about his upset at the absence of a eulogy being allowed at his wife Grania's funeral. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Archbishop Dermot Martin, well, Emeritus Archbishop. Dermot, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And how are you?
Okay.
Are you okay? Okay. Now, you contacted us because you say it was you, Your Grace, who did you not issue new guidelines when you were in Drumcondra, so to speak?
And funeral guidance for funerals. Yeah. They're day on, and they've been updated. I just thought it would be useful to let you know. I'll go very quickly just a few lines. While it's not actually part of the Christian funeral rite, a custom has begun at funerals whereby eulogy or appreciation of the person is given by a relative or a friend of the deceased. Sensitivity has to be exercised around this, as occasionally insensitive and indeed inappropriate things have been said. Saying something uplifting and charitable in the spirit of appreciation about the person who has died should be the main emphasis.
Okay.
Then it says, a short tribute of the family, if possible, is possible but not obligatory. And then it should be brief, no longer than 5 minutes, written down. It should only concern words of tribute to the deceased and thanks to those who have helped and supported the family during this time. An immediate family member may not always be the person because people might be upset and someone close to the family could do this. And then it says, an appropriate time for these words of appreciation is one at the reception of the body in the church, this takes place the evening before.
Yeah.
At the reception of the body, if it takes place at the beginning of the funeral mass.
Yeah.
Or at the conclusion of the funeral mass, before the prayers of commendation and farewell. This will mean, you know, at the end of the mass, after the final prayer. And before then, the final blessing of the considered an appropriate time. I think there are reasonable norms.
I know you were a diplomat as well as a man of God. But I don't, and I won't.
I was a diplomat, but as a man of God also.
I know that. But that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to ask you to comment on what your confreres, your fellow bishops, said to these two families. One saying it's completely disallowed in the course of the Mass. I know that seems heartless, but that's the rule and it applies in all situations. And the other letter from the other bishop says is very similar. These are the rules. I'm unable to approve of it. Now, what you've said there and what you've written, I presume after consultation, knowing you, is the North Pole to the South Pole in distance?
No, this is not. This is a formal document on funeral ministry. That's you'll find it on the Diocesan website.
Yeah. Well, it seems.
I think the idea there is to try and. I like the term words of appreciation.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what it should be about. And you know, I also stress, you know, mm-hmm. clear that there have been and still are at times insensitive, and I know priests have sometimes difficulties when they're presented with texts which are totally, and most priests sit down with the family and allow that, and I don't, if it's done there, as I said, at the conclusion of the Mass before the final. Prayers of commendation. It doesn't upset the ritual of the Mass.
But it is allowed in the body of the Church.
That's the practice in Dublin. Yeah.
Why does it differ so strongly? Where it's allowed.
I presume the reaction is. I mean, you know, there have been. Examples of inappropriate things. One of the difficulties I had to face when I was Archbishop was some of the terrible abuse that took place at the funerals of criminals and drug barons, and the whole liturgy was hijacked. This may have been one of the reasons why. Bishops, not just in Ireland, but in other places.
But they were so rare, Archbishop, that they made national headlines.
They made national headlines, but the ones that didn't make national headlines are the difficulties where the priest was put into enormous difficulty.
It would strike me that those guidelines, as outlined by you, were no longer than 5 minutes, written down, absolutely critical. Delivered by one person, words of tribute, there's also practical help here. You know, write it down, preferably rehearse it out loud, and I think that would help the priest as well, if the priest was able to say, and also pick somebody, because somebody might be overcome with grief. And even
may not be used to speaking.
Or may not be accustomed to. So they're practical guidelines.
One of the practical difficulties I have in many other things is that you say to somebody you can speak for 5 minutes, and they arrive with a text which is five pages. In many ways, a good example is the number of words. You know, which you're typing things nowadays. So that the whole rest of the thing isn't hijacked. But the overall funeral liturgy should be somewhere where people and as I say, the two things: a tribute to the deceased and of thanks to those who've helped.
Anyway,
I thought that they're the formal norms of the Dublin Diocese. I thought it would be useful.
Well, I can tell you, Dermot, we haven't had one single adverse comment about the Dublin Diocese and funerals. And in fact, as I said, I think it was yesterday, we heard from one family who moved, who asked, obviously they had connections with the Dublin Diocese, but were like so many people were living in Meath. And they asked the parish of where their deceased father was buried. Could they have they were allowed a eulogy?
I'd say it also to be attentive to the sensitivity. The priest has to be sensitive, and you know he may have to. You know he may say, but in most cases, you know the funeral services in Dublin Diocese are extraordinarily thoughtful, And the, you know, that the, I've known so many priests who, I live in a parish where we had 4 funerals last week, and it's very difficult for priests, and they're but they give a huge amount of attention to the sensitivity of people.
And I know,
I think we should appreciate that.
I know Dee is listening. Dee, I can't see anyone disagreeing with what Dermot, Archbishop Dermot Martin is saying. But are you thinking, what do you want to say to him? You say he is what he should campaign among other bishops to get it in.
Well, yeah, basically. Like, it's a personal choice for every family to make. And whether you can pluck the courage
which is what Archbishop Dermot just read out. But are you saying, well, Archbishop Dermot Martin is retired. Are you saying he should try and influence the other? Did it ever come up in the meetings in Maynooth?
I can't
insofar
remember.
As, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm retired now for four years. Anyway.
I know that. And every diocese is their own control, isn't it?
You know, every bishop has to look at the sensitivities of the, I was at a funeral only very recently, and the words of appreciation were very, they fitted in entirely into the spirit of the liturgy.
Okay, but Dermot, have you ever refused the eulogy?
I have never. Okay. We have the diocese has its policy.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. But I think that's.
And I think when it's done sensitively, I mean there was one occasion of the funeral where there were 22 eulogies.
Okay,
and I think I can say
one
of the people at the funeral was the President of Ireland, Mary McInnes.
Yeah.
And I had to leave because I was going somewhere, and she said to me, I'd become the Archbishop of Dublin now because you can leave before all the eulogies are set. I mean there have been abuses.
Yeah.
They should be condemned, and that's the
gently directed, which is the directive that you've just read out, very gently and sensitively and helpfully directed.
And most priests, they're extremely sensitive in the way they work on these, and I think those norms have made. I think the practice in Dublin Diocese is something that's very, very worthy,
I know you won't say it, but should be copied elsewhere. I think from what we're hearing. But anyway, I'm also thinking, Dermot, if women were allowed into the priesthood, Mary McAleese would probably be the Archbishop of Dublin.
I know she's retired as well. You know?
And she's eminently involved in the church in every sense of that.
But I mean that these norms are part of a much broader document on funeral ministry, which you must remember that nowadays there may not always be a priest present at the funeral.
That's true, yeah.
And there will be a funeral team or a deacon.
Yeah.
We'll carry the funeral.
But
the important thing is that we all work together to ensure that funerals are very worthy, that they reflect the nature of the liturgy, which is a celebration of God's mercy. I was just preaching this morning on something else, and I came across a phrase of Pope John at the opening of the Second Vatican Council. And he was talking about severity, and he says, in our time, the Bride of Christ prefers the ministry of mercy to that of severity. Fascinating thing that was said by a Pope 66 years ago, when the norm was severity. And I think this idea of the ministry of mercy is something that we need to... To all of us to look at that in the way we live the Christian life.
Okay. And before you go, Dermot, if I can ask you, as you know, the obsequies for Jimmy Carter, the late President of the United States, is just about to begin in Washington. Did you ever meet him in your travels over, in your work? Sorry, more
important. I met him in Dublin, actually, when he was here for some parts of the Carter Center.
Yeah, the housing.
Because the Carter Center is...
Oh, the Peace Human Center. Rights, yes, yes.
Yeah, and you know, he was an extraordinary, and I do remember somebody telling me that of the various people that at that stage, it's a long time ago now, that Pope John Paul II met, the various heads of state.
Yeah.
He said one of the most impressive was his meeting with Jimmy Carter in the White House.
Okay.
Didn't go into the details, but they probably prayed together, you know.
Okay. Well, as I say, in Washington Cathedral now, the service is just about to begin. President-elect Trump and Melania have just arrived, and every other president will be attending as well. Are you still taking your daily walks?
One of the problems is that I try to go up to 15 minutes walk every day. But in the cold weather, although we're very lucky here where I am now in Dublin, the ground is completely dry because it hasn't rained. So there's no.
Okay.
I mean, it's for people coming. A lot of elder people come to mass and so on. I bought 2 years ago a big box of salt.
Okay.
I haven't had to use it.
Oh, great. That's Dublin. Because the reason I'm saying this, last time you told me about your walk is somebody stopped you. You were sitting on a bench and someone said, I know you. And they, of course, you've been in the public eye, and said, aren't you the fella from Fair City?
That was a modest story. The other one was the man in the Phoenix Park who was walking by. I was, you know, in an open-neck shirt,
mm-hmm.
and he said to me, did they take the collar off you, or did you have to give it back?
By the way,
there's room for a bit of Dublin wit.
Yeah, of course
also
there is,
in the words of appreciation. Also in the words of appreciation of the deceased person.
Did you go to see Conclave, the movie?
I didn't, no. I haven't been at the cinema for years.
Okay. Well, the Vatican, which you know so well, looks absolutely stunningly beautiful, and it's a fascinating movie. Okay, Archbishop Dermot Martin, retired, obviously, Your Grace, thank you so much for that contribution. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, there's some reconciliation there in the front pew of the Washington Cathedral, which is the premier, so to speak, cathedral of the non-Catholic and the Protestant religion in the United States of America. There's Barack Obama and Donald Trump sitting beside each other, gently laughing at each other's, or smiling at each other's little chit-chat. Maybe that's probably the best thing we've seen in a long time. Padraig O'Gorman, Padraig, your point, please. You were listening to Archbishop Dermot Martin. You disagree.
I didn't say I disagreed.
I'm
just quoting from the general instruction of the Roman missile number 382.
Yeah.
At the funeral mass, there should, as a rule, be a short homily, but never a eulogy of any kind.
Okay.
So that means that the Bishop of Meath is in obedience to the Catholic Church, that the rules and regulations...
And is Archbishop Dermot Martin, who's no longer in office, is he in disobedience when he said...
The other diocese must be in disobedience because they don't seem to be obeying it.
And what's the penalty?
The problem is that we have disunity.
What do you mean? How does that show itself?
Well, we'd be praying next week probably for unity among the churches. And this is a form of disunity where there is a rule in the church signed by, approved by Cardinal Arinze, who was at the Vatican Council, on behalf of the Congregation for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacrament. The bishops of Ireland signed up to it. And yet this rule then, obviously for... the reasons that Archbishop Martin has said,
But do you think Archbishop Martin is relaxed? Are you saying that Archbishop Martin is wrong?
No, I think he's trying to make the best of a situation that has developed. And what needs to be done is, it says here, the funeral mass.
So should you're saying it should be stamped out?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it shouldn't be as part of the mass.
So is it at the conclusion of the funeral mass, but then should it be allowed in the church?
Well, that's up to them to decide that. But perhaps...
What is it? In fairness, Patrick, you're helping me here because you've read up on it. But is it allowed in the church under the cardinal that you've quoted on the doctrine?
In the building, the church building. I honestly don't know that.
Okay.
I have seen where people have got up and given the eulogy, and then the priests come out onto the altar and they say the mass, and then the cortege is led out of the church.
Yeah, but in fairness, Archbishop Martin, I think he would see in his mind's eye even the priest, the celebrant, being on the altar when the few words are being said, either at beginning or end, in fairness to him. Thanks, Patrick. Michelle Dempsey, finally. Michelle, your point, please.
I just agree with everything that people were saying. My brother did a eulogy for my father. Now, we're not in the same diocese, but it meant a lot to the family.
Okay. As you say, you point out your father died suddenly, so you wanted to speak. The family wanted to say something publicly, and the eulogy only took what was in the guidelines as read out there by Archbishop Dermot Martin within a certain time frame. Okay, back tomorrow, 1:45. Tara Lockery Grant produced. Richard Burns the producer. Paul Murnock is on sound. And Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.